This is 2.1, a Netrunner Reboot Project podcast, episode 46, Exciting Time to Be Alive. Hey, this is Remy. The title card for this week's episode is Silencer, a new criminal piece of hardware that we'll talk to in a little bit, new for double time. The flavor text on Silencer says, take Moore's Law, iterate it over a century or two, and mix in quantum computing. You get to the point where you're developing the software on a hardware platform that you designed at the same time. Tailor-made for each other. Exciting time to be alive. William Knuth, The Tower of Babbage. So, double time has arrived for the 2.1 group, marking the completion of the spin cycle. So now we have basically half the reboot card pool available with the core set, the Genesis cycle, creation and control, and the spin cycle. So we'll be getting into the runner side of that this time around. But first, a couple of other bits of information. Breaking news. The pre-constructed league has returned. So if you'd like to get in on the first round of the pre-constructed league, it's going to be starting June 6th or 7th, so that's just a couple of days from when I'm posting this episode. Join in. It's just basically all that's being asked is you play one game a week, or one set of games a week. So you get with one other person, you play your two games. And what you can do is just pick from any one of the pre-constructed decks. If you haven't played before on Riteki, it's very simple. You just create an account on Riteki. You go in and all of the pre-cons are preloaded into each account. So you can just go in there and pick one and play. Then, of course, to be part of the league, you're going to need to jump on in the Discord and sign up there. But I've decided to jump back in. It's been a few months since the last time I've done a league. Let's see if I can do any better than near the bottom of the table this time. Anonymous tip. So just a few weeks ago, about a month ago now, back on May 5th, one of the new users that came in, D_2113, was talking about being a new person to the game and had an interest in Atom, actually, and maybe Apex. Those are the mini factions, which we don't have yet until Data and Destiny. But ultimately, he asked, what is the difference between the factions? There was an interesting conversation that came out of that I thought I'd share that fits, I think, into this more simple version, this more simple segment here in the podcast. So the big boy says, generally speaking, criminal is about applying pressure and keeping the corp on the back foot. Anarch is about unraveling the corp's board and trashing their stuff to control the game. Shaper is about efficiently and quickly answering the corp's threats while building up their own super late game. Of course, this is a super reductive overview, and there's a lot more going on than just that. Criminal is for if you like to feel like you're always the one on the attack. Anarch is for if you like to feel like you're slowly crushing the corp. Shaper is for if you like to sit back and have the answer for everything. After a short digression into the mini factions, D next asked, well, next question, how do you build a runner deck? And Ugin Ronin says, that's a good question. I've been asking the same thing. And the big boy says, it's not easy. Ugin Ronin says, you want to know what you're doing when you access. That's what you told me, big boy. And the big boy says, but make sure you have ways to make money, ways to draw or find cards, ways to break ice, ways to see multiple cards or hurt the corp when you get in. There are lots of good cards that don't do those four things, but if you skimp on one of these categories, you can end up with something non-functional. And then he made what I've seen has been a regular recommendation for someone wanting to get good at playing the game. Start with Reg Valencia, then play Andromeda, then play Mopus Kit. So these are three of the pre-constructed decks. And when he says play, start with playing these, I think he suggests maybe playing them 20 times apiece. Now, if you're playing along with 2.1 at home, we can't do Reg Val. It's missing seven different cards, of which there are two or three copies apiece. So that's pretty sizable, like a third to maybe even a quarter. More than a third of the deck. Now, Andy Sucker, though, that precon is just missing three different cards for six total, and all of them arrive in the next deluxe box. So as of Honor and Profit, that Andromeda deck will be complete. Even now, I think she's still pretty good without them. And the Mopus Kit, similarly, is only missing four different cards, five total, so they're mostly one-ofs, and so it's mostly workable with the current pool. But there's a way to get a good handle on what a runner deck is or should be doing, and those are three different flavors of runner decks. Feedback filter. Normally this would be tacked on to the end of the episode, but because so much of this episode is going to be talking about double time, and so much of the feedback I got from last time and the conversation that spun out of last episode is specific to playing those pre-constructed decks, I thought I would put this here in a more accessible part of the episode. So first of all, the big boy weighed in on how to 2.1-ify the precon The World Is Yours psychographics that I did my own personal deep dive on it. Remember that we're missing two cards from that pre-constructed deck, Guard, which is easily swapped for Roto Turret, and Global Food Initiative. Now, he recommended realigning the agendas in a way different than what I did. So as a reminder, here is what the precon wants. 2 Astroscript pilot program, 3 breaking news, 3 market research, 2 TGTBT. I suggested sticking with 2 Astroscript and 3 breaking news and 3 market research, cutting to 1 TGTBT and adding in 2 Project Beal. Meanwhile, the big boy suggested going up to 3 Astroscript, still 3 breaking news, 3 market research, and then going up to 3 TGTBT. So actually adding an agenda. I deliberately tried to avoid that because I had no idea what to cut. What he said to this adjusted agenda suite is, it's not even definitely worse. The 3 TGTBT is nasty versus attacking runners, and the 1 influence is nice to get another Roto Turret. So I asked, what other card would you cut? And he said, one of the sweeps week, probably. All the choices are tough, and that is true. The big boy also weighed in on the StimHack article I talked about last time that discussed the Grendel version of supermodernism, which exists in the reboot precons as Grendel YOLO. And he said, by the way, traps or bait cards in Grendel that don't fire from centrals like Snare does are worthless and will lose you far more games than they win. Punitive also makes no sense as punitive Counter-Strike. He says in the article that paying 3 to do 2 meat damage is good, and that's pretty laughable. Regarding the traps and bait cards, I said, I have no doubt you are correct, but the reason for that is not clear to me. Could you elaborate? To which he said, same reason they're generally bad, but even more so because your ice isn't taxing. You would need to plant the trap precisely when they have rigged up, not a turn before or after, early, and they can't get in, and you should have put an agenda. Late, and they'll have likely ransacked your centrals and trashed your trap. It just requires an absolute perfect storm to work and is a useless draw all the rest of the time. You also don't want to add more trashables to the deck. It loses you games versus R&D interface and medium. Now, the reason why that's true is because if you put things that can be trashed from R&D, then they can run in, trash things, run back and see new stuff all on the same turn. That's not really something you want in this deck where you don't have strong defenses. But I did want to know about the part that he said about traps and bait cards being what he meant by that. I said, you mean mainly advanceable assets like Project Junebug and Cerebral Overrider? Are there decks where those are actually good? Or are they only just fun cards to play with and get random wins once every 10 to 20 games? Big Boy says, Junebug is almost never good. Although running one in Personal Evolution can get wins occasionally, and that deck has lots of built-in central protection for it. Overrider is good with Mooshins, but otherwise, not really. That's coming up in the next deluxe box. Aggressive Secretary is the most potent, but has the usual reliability issues. Usual meaning easily sniped out of centrals, because all they do is pay a very small trash cost. I think its place is in super fast decks that want a backdoor way to win. Problem is, it's not worth two influence in Grendel. But if someone's Grendel influence was three Snare, one SEA, one Aggressive Secretary, that could be fine. Because if they run and install advance Aggressive Secretary, it basically ends the game. Whereas if they run a four net Junebug, you still need a follow-up. Gaminet chipped in with, install advance overrider in blue sun murder makes life easy. Learn to live the, I don't know what this word is, Alkrond life. Never mulligan. All victories through murder. Truly the only one of us to understand Lucas's, Garfield's, true intent. So, I don't catch that reference. I just wanted to share it, that blue sun, that's an ID coming up in a few packs. And Cleric said Ghost Branch is cool in Argus because it also kind of ends the game if it lands. And Argus, that's coming in the third deluxe box. There was also a discussion about Account Siphon, which was triggered by the comments in Martin Presley's Supermodernism V3 thread, wherein his runner deck ran Account Siphon over and over again. And there was somebody in there constantly complaining about Account Siphon. And one pull quote that Muryu found from that thread was, playing with Account Siphon and winning with it is not something to be proud of. Under no circumstances does it make someone a good player. The mechanic is broken, and the wins using it are empty and unworthy of any regard at all. Period. So, that is not a competitive mindset. The competitive mindset is, a win is a win. It doesn't matter how you get it. As long as you're not cheating, obviously. But you use a card that's very, very strong to get your win, great, do it. But it's not really maybe a friendly card. So if you want to have a very friendly, casual game, well, then maybe you just decide between you know what, let's not use Account Siphon. That's not fun to play. Muryu mentioned that somewhere that she doesn't like playing against PE with all the net damage. She goes, so if someone puts out a PE deck, I'll just say, okay, you win. Because she doesn't want to play it. And that's fine. I mean, why play something you don't have to play if you're not playing at a tournament where you have to play whatever? So after some pushback on that, the big boy did say, to be fair, Account Siphon was way more brutal at zero cost. You were threatening to land it generally a turn earlier than you are in reboot, so there were more games where you just got run over before you could draw enough ice. And Gaminet said, also at zero cost, you could just T1 play it to face check. To which Muryu responded, ye old forced activation siphon. Now I asked, ignorant question, but why is that not something you do at cost two? Right? Why not just face check it because you're spending two, or force an activation with a cost of two rather than zero? And Gaminet says, then you're throwing away $2, which, because you know they res the ice, you get stopped, you lose $2. And I said, $2 doesn't seem like that much to me. Perhaps I'm showing why I'm bad at being a runner. I guess the idea is that Siphon isn't in there to force res ice, but to make you money. And Gaminat said, at zero cost, the card is very flexible. It can act as forged activation orders, but if it's Eli or a bluff, you eat $5 and gain 10. It can act as econ. Once you know what the ice on HQ is, siphon at zero cost is gain 6 credits in 3 clicks. And the corp loses 5. As opposed to at 2 cost, now 4 credits in 3 if clearing tags. And if you want to force tag clearing, just put 2 closed accounts in everything. Now at 2 cost is a very expensive forged activation order. It's still a good payout, but now the payout is smaller if it lands, and its floor is much lower. Zero cost hit Enigma is just a face check. 2 cost hit Enigma is like hitting Data Pike as well. So yeah, $2 makes a difference. Zaylee then jumped in to offer making a siphon guide, saying there are a lot of ways to play it. And there was some encouragement for her to do just that. If she does, you can be sure I will bring it to you here. Satellite uplink. Double time, the runner side. Again, Double Time is the final pack of the Spin Cycle, the second cycle of data packs. It was released March 28th of 2014, so a little more than a year and a half after the core. There are 9 runner cards, of which 6 are adjusted. There are 11 corp cards, of which 8 are adjusted. So the corp got a little extra help in this pack, although 2 of those are actually a little less help. And one of the runner adjustments is also a nerf. Among the 9 runner cards, 3 are Anarch, 3 are Criminal, 2 are Shaper, and 1 is Neutral. Let's hit the nerf first. It is the Criminal card Fall Guy, a connection resource with an install cost of 0, and the influence, instead of being 1, is now 3. It has 2 trash abilities. 1, you trash the card to prevent another installed resource from being trashed, and the other is simply gain 2 credits. The buffs are 2 of the Anarch cards, Singularity, a double run event whose cost has been reduced from 4 to 2. It's also 3 influence. Make a run on a remote, and if you're successful, you can trash all the cards installed in that server. Art here from Adam S. Doyle. Also, Dyson Fractal Generator, a stealth hardware that install cost reduced from 1 to 0. Also 3 influence, provides 1 recurring credit for using fractors. Art here from Gong Studios. The other 2 criminal cards are also adjusted, buffed for these 2. Silencer, our title card, another piece of stealth hardware. Also, its install cost reduced from 1 to 0. It is also 3 influence, and it is 1 recurring credit for using killers. And then Savoir Faire, a program with an install cost also reduced from 1 to 0. It is also 3 influence. And for 1 credit, no clicks, just 1 credit, you can install a program from your grip, paying the install cost. So that's an instant speed install from your hand. Not quite as good as the instant speed go search and install that self-modifying code provides, but it is repeatable, though not more than once per turn. And one of the Shaper cards is buffed Paintbrush, a program with an install cost of 3. Its memory units have been reduced from 2 to 1. It's also 4 influence. It gives you this ability. Click. Choose a rezzed piece of ice. That ice gains Sentry, Code Gate, or Barrier until the end of the next run this turn. The 3 unchanged cards are the Anarch Queen's Gambit, a double event, cost 0, 3 influence, recurring theme here, lots of 3 influence cards. Place up to 3 advancement tokens on an unrezzed card in a remote server. Gain 2 credits for each advancement token placed. You cannot access that card this turn. Art from Matt Zeilinger. The other Shaper card, Power Nap, a double event, cost of 0, 2 influence. Instead of, you gain 2 credits, and then also an additional credit for each double event in your heap. That would not include this card when you play it. Artwork here from Gong Studios. And the one neutral find is also the one neutral find. The one neutral card is also unadjusted. Lucky find, another double event. This one a cost of 3 and 2 influence, though neutral. Simply gain 9 credits. Our artwork here again from Gong Studios. The at-a-glance reviews from the Reddit thread of that name says that Anarch have a good card in Queen's Gambit, Criminal a good card in Silencer, and potentially useful for any runner are Fall Guy and Lucky Find. Meanwhile, in the pre-constructed decks, just 2 of the 9 cards make an appearance, really, barely. One, Singularity, shows up in Siphon Max. This is the reboot version of Anatomy of Anarchy we discussed a few episodes back. Still missing 9 individual cards and the ID, so we're nowhere near building that one. And 3 Lucky Find show up in Prepaid Voicepad Kate, which, as I said, nope, that was Mopus Kit. It's missing 5 cards. 4 cards. Kate is also missing just 5 cards. The Source. The runner nerf here in Double Time to Fall Guy. The big boy says this is a necessary change, along with the influence change to Data Leak Reversal, to make Siphon, Fall Guy, and DLR harder to put into the same deck. So let's run down briefly what all 3 of these cards are. I've already mentioned Fall Guy. It's a connection resource with an install cost of 0, now 3 influence. The main ability is to trash it to prevent another installed resource from being trashed. Well, what resource might you want to keep from being trashed? How about Data Leak Reversal? An Anarch resource with a cost of 0 has also been increased to 3 influence, and you can install only if you made a successful run on a central server the same turn. If you are tagged, it gains the ability Click. The Corp trashes the top card of R&D. Meanwhile, Account Siphon is a criminal event that costs 2, it's 4 influence. You make a run on HQ and, you know what Account Siphon does. So the basic play here, originally, the runner would have Fall Guy already installed. Then the runner gets tagged. Let's say they play Account Siphon, right? That tags you. Then for their next click, they install Data Leak Reversal, since now they are tagged and they have just made a successful run on a central server. And then for the last 2 clicks, they can click Data Leak Reversal twice and dump 2 cards from R&D directly into archives. Now, DLR is the sort of thing the Corp cannot let the runner keep using. So on their next turn, the Corp is going to want to trash it. But when they pay their click and 2 credits to trash DLR, the runner triggers Fall Guy, which has the ability Trash to prevent another installed resource from being trashed. So now, to get rid of this dangerous resource, is going to cost the Corp 2 clicks and 4 credits, 1 to get rid of the Fall Guy, 1 to get rid of the Data Leak Reversal. What if they have 2 Fall Guys out? Now they're taking their whole turn. What if you manage to get 3 out? They can't get rid of Data Leak Reversal, and then you can just go to town on the next turn. So, with both of those cards being bumped from just 1 influence all the way up to 3, one being Criminal, one being Anarch, it's going to be much more challenging to have multiple copies of all of these, especially if you're Noise and you have to import both Account Siphon and Fall Guy. In fact, I'm not sure Noise has enough influence to import 2 copies of Account Siphon and 1 Fall Guy. So that really breaks up this unpleasant situation. But hey, feel free to continue comboing Fall Guy with the Source and slowing down the Corp that way. Quest completed. We are renaming this segment to talk about the runner buffs in this data pack, Double Time. I've had the thought to go back and look through the patch notes, which go back into about a year and a half ago, late 2022. And so any of the more recent adjustments have some comments in there. For example, Singularity was buffed back in July of 2023. So presumably I covered it here on the show. I don't remember. And if I did, I really didn't know what I was saying. So I'll just reiterate it here. Singularity is a clunky but effective trick for eater decks to get into remotes. At 4 cost in the original game, it was far too expensive to actually use. I'm finding that at 1 cost, it's a little too affordable for what it does. 2 seems like a fair price where it won't see any less play, but getting your opponent to play it more than once will start to feel like it adds up. That's a quote from the big boy. So, of course, we don't have Eater yet. That's coming, I think, in the third deluxe box along with the cutlery suite. But there, originally it was buffed to just cost 1. Now it's cost 2. So Silencer, this from the patch notes in October of 2023. Also, he mentions Cloak here. Not Lockpick, though. I'll come back to that point. But the big boy says, Stealth Criminal used to be a cool archetype that a lot of players enjoyed. And sadly, in Rebootist, it has taken heavy collateral damage from the Desperado nerf. Initially, I thought that the deck would benefit enough from the removal of the Astro Train, its worst matchup by far, to make up for this, but now it seems the deck may need a little more help. The decrease in the cost of Silencer should partially make up for the inevitable cost of having to install a memory card at some point in the game, and the influence reduction on Cloak should make deck building a little smoother. These are very safe buffs to make, as they affect basically no other decks. Try building a Switchblade deck and see what you think. Well, you can't do that if you're playing 2.1, but you will be able to soon. Switchblade comes in the next cycle. The only other card I want to talk about with buffs is Paintbrush, which is basically an easy-to-reuse version of Tinkering from the core set. It's had its major sticking point addressed. In a Shaper rig that will often have a lot of programs, including maybe a 2-memory unit self-modifying code and or a 2MU Magnum Opus, having another 2MU program to wedge in is a big ask. But if now it's only 1, so it becomes a lot better. So I want to share this from the Netrunner DB card review by Lupus Yonderboy. He says, such an underrated card. Yeah, I know the common objection, it costs 2MU and is click-intensive, but if you compare it to another 2MU yet popular Shaper program, namely Magnum Opus, a Paintbrush click can be much more worthwhile than a Magnum click, if not as versatile. For instance, go through a, he says Komainu, I'll say Tsurugi, a bad sentry, with a Yogg.0, through a Hadrian's Wall with a fairy or a dagger, or through an archer with a lady, which lady we don't have yet either. Now, there are a few things to consider when using Paintbrush. First, you need some very efficient breakers to go with it, some that make a whole range of ice worthless. If you want to use it for making Gordian Blade a corroder, you've got it wrong. Gordian with corroder is a much better choice. But if you go with Yogg.0, now, every single ice with strength lower than 4 is 1 click away. If you want to use Paintbrush, take breakers that can break many subroutines or strengthen high for a few credits. See Yogg.0, Dagger, Fairy, Morningstar, or he mentions a few other breakers that are coming soon. Then you can expand these powerful breakers to every subtype instead of just 1. Second, don't rely on only 1 breaker, but instead 2. It's better if one of these is a killer because you'll need to face check before using Paintbrush. Choose them so they complete each other outside of their ice subtype of choice. For instance, one should be good to strengthen, the other to handle subroutine heavy ices, like Dagger and Morningstar. Or one should be set for low strength ice, the other for higher strength, like Yogg.0 and Fairy. It's hard to fit 3 Paintbrush compliant breakers in a deck since Such programs tend to need support, recursion, or stealth source mainly. But don't deny a classic breaker to handle your missing subtype or even an AI. He said an IA, and I was confused there for a second. Third, you must find a way to earn clicks when it's needed. In a Shaper deck, All-Nighter is a good solution. Imagine you're playing Kit. Here's a pattern of a last turn you may meet more often than not, if not in every game. Paintbrush, indexing, All-Nighter, paintbrush, paintbrush, run R&D. 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, that's right. Or paintbrush, run a remote and bounce an unresed piece of ice. All-Nighter, paintbrush, paintbrush, run the remote again. It can be very surprising if your opponent forgot you installed All-Nighter a few turns ago. Also, it goes well with Tutor, as you might expect. When needing your missing breaker, consider to get your paintbrush instead. It's not always the right choice, but it can be as disruptive as a test run and femme fatale. In conclusion, paintbrush is a tricky card, so fun to play, that can be devastating if well used. Decks based around it have to be finely driven, but it's worth it. TLDR, paintbrush is tricky, but with the right breakers, it's very good. Lucky Find. New economy options in Double Time. All three that we're going to discuss here are the three unchanged cards. So let's talk about them in a little more detail. Queen's Gambit. This is the one where you put down three advancement tokens on a card that's unrezzed in a server, so not a piece of ice, and then you get 6 credits. It's so very Anarch, right? Risky, but profitable. At base, it's like playing 2 easy marks. You get 6 credits for 2 clicks. Now, it's a little better than that because Easy Mark is also 2 cards. Of course, it's also a little worse than that since you're giving the corp a triple advancement on something. Now, naturally, that might seem crazy, but of course, there are many decks and many times when you know that the card in the server isn't an agenda and the corp isn't running Trick of Light. And even if it is an agenda, if that 6 credits gives you the money to go, well, I was going to say to go steal at the same turn, but you can't access at the same turn. Yeah, so maybe you just go in singularity at the same turn. Maybe that's the idea. Or maybe the corp doesn't have enough money. Yeah, I don't know. The 0 play cost also, nothing to sniff at. But at the same time, Easy Mark is 0 play. 0 to play. It doesn't see a lot of play. There's no pre-con deck that has it. But still, going from 0 to 6 is a nice way to go install your Liberated account as an Anarch or drop Yogg, for example. Power Nap. Let's talk about this one. It's a very specific kind of money card because it relies on you playing a lot of doubles. Now, as a reminder, what it does is you play it for 2 clicks, you get 2 credits plus 1 additional credit for every double in your heap. So the main problem with that approach is, like we've discussed over the last few packs, and we'll discuss more in a little bit, the doubles just aren't so good that you're likely to be running a bunch of them naturally or in every deck. So this fits into a very specific deck, a deck that goes heavy on doubles. The doubles deck. So let's presume you're just playing for fun with a doubles deck. What is the payout on this card? Well, if it's the first double you play, you get the 2 credits and nothing more. So that means that for each click, you're getting a credit. That's just pointless. In fact, it's actively bad if you count the click you needed to take to draw the card. If there is 1 double in the heap, you gain 3 credits, which is 1.5 per click. Now, that's not awful, but it's not any different from clicking Cotty Jones and then clearing it, right? 2 clicks to get 3 credits. You typically aren't doing that. But, you know, the corp will sometimes do 2 clicks for 3 credits within Gila Hands Arcology. So again, it's not awful. If there are 2 doubles in the heap, that means you're gaining 4 credits. That's 2 per click. Well, 2 credits for a click, that's magnum opus level. And on top of that, you've gotten probably some benefit from the other cards you've already dumped in the trash. So that's okay. If there are three doubles in the heap, you're gaining 5 credits. That's 2.5 credits per click. Now we're getting pretty decent. If there are 4 cards in the heap, 4 doubles, you're gaining 6 credits, and now it's just as good as Queen's Gambit. Or Easy Mark. It's 3 credits per click. If you manage to get 6 doubles in the heap, you're gaining 8 credits. That's 4 credits per click. Now, Sure Gamble level of good. And actually a little bit better, because again, it's just one card. So, and any more than that, it's just really, really strong. So it stands to reason, though, that you want to have at least 3 doubles in your heap to make it really worth playing, and maybe 5 or 6. So how many do you actually have to have in your deck to have that many in the heap when the time comes to play Power Nap? Maybe double? Yeah, that's a lot of doubles. Or how about this? Install Starlight Crusade funding. Right, so all the doubles you play cost only 1 click. That's click 1. Then play 3 doubles. Okay? Then on your next turn, play 3 Power Nap. You'll have lost a click to the Starlight Crusade. So you play 3 of your Power Nap, and then the following turn, you sell Starlight Crusade funding to the ESOP that you've also already installed. In that situation, where you've gotten to had 3 and then 4 and then 5 doubles in the trash, those 3 Power Naps would net you 18 credits for just 3 clicks. Well, technically, I guess that's 4, because you've lost the click to Starlight Crusade funding. And so that's, 4.5 credits per click, which is only a little better than just playing 3 Sure Gamble, which are going to get you 4 credits per click, or 12 credits in 3 clicks. I mean, it becomes really good, but there's a lot of moving parts on that combo that don't really bear thinking about. Now, though I'm going to talk more about the doubles themselves in the next section, I do want to touch on the distribution and influence costs of the doubles we have so far, which is, by the way, most of them. Only 3 more show up in the reboot card pool, 1 in Honor and Profit, 2 more in the fourth cycle. In fact, even the full Fantasy Flight pool only has 5 more beyond that, 8 total. So we've seen 10. That means more than half of all doubles in the game came in this cycle for the runners. So of these 10 doubles that we've seen in the spin cycle, 3 are Anarch, 4 are Criminal, only 2 are Shaper, 1 is Neutral. And let's look at the influence levels. For Anarch, their influence costs are 2, 3, and 3. For Criminal, they are 1, 2, 3, and 4. For Shaper, they're just 1 and 2. And for Neutral, it's 2. So even though you see Chaos Theory in the artwork taking the Power Nap, I feel like the doubles deck is better in another faction, because it's going to be easier for Anarch, and especially Criminal, to use their in-faction doubles and import Power Nap rather than the other way around. So Shaper, if the Shaper is going to do it, maybe their doubles are just like 3 Eureka, 3 Power Nap, 3 Lucky Find. I mean, that's all you're going to have without spending influence on other factions, and hey, maybe that's enough. Maybe that's sufficient. All right, a more straightforward economy card is Lucky Find, as just mentioned. For 3 credits to play and 2 clicks, you make 9 credits. That is a net of 6, which again is 3 per click, just like a pair of Easy Marks, just like Queen's Gambit. Or just like Power Nap, if you've already dumped, 4 doubles in the trash. Unlike Power Nap, you don't have to build an entire deck around it to make it work for you. However, it does still have that 2 influence cost that any faction will have to pay. Sorry, Professor, you don't get to have a lucky find. So for 2 influence, I don't know, I feel like most decks probably have better options than this. Shaper already has Magnum Opus and Professional Contacts. Anarch has Liberated Account. Criminal has, Easy Mark and Account Siphon. Everybody has Sure Gamble and Armitage and Dirty Laundry and Cotty Jones and Daily Casts. Interestingly, in the prepaid voice pad Kate pre-constructed deck, you will find three copies of Lucky Find, the only double to appear in any runner precon. But that deck has the option of using this card in a very specific way. Specifically, the deck's namesake card, Prepaid Voice Pad, which is neutral hardware that costs 2 to install and gives you 1 recurring credit for playing events. The majority of the precons run 17 to 25 events. The exceptions are Adam and Haley that only have 10 and Noise only has 6. So this card fits pretty well into a lot of decks because there's a lot of events, Prepaid Voice Pad, I mean. Of course, you have to use it 3 times to actually start making it worthwhile. But in a deck that already has a bunch of events and is using Prepaid Voice Pad, Lucky Find is a very interesting addition because you can use the recurring credit, or recurring credits, if there's more than one voice pad, to pay the play cost of Lucky Find. So while it's already decent for 3 credits and 2 clicks to make 9, a 6 credit swing, what about only 2 credits and 2 clicks for 9? A 7 credit swing, that's pretty good. Or hey, maybe you have all 3 voice pads out and you can play your Lucky Find for 0 credits and 2 clicks to make 9, which is 4.5 credits per click. That's even better than Sure Gamble. Or I guess, as I just said when I was talking about Power Nap, still only a little better than just playing Sure Gamble. It's extra Sure Gambles in the deck, though. That's not enough. Data Sucker. Let me talk about some of the sets of cards that we have seen throughout the cycle and bring them together. The biggest thing, of course, is the doubles. And I've been run through these as we have gone, but let me just run through very briefly how the doubles have been adjusted for Reboot. Frame Job, cost from 1 to 0. Hostage, cost from 1 to 0. Eureka, cost from 3 to 0. Running Interference from 4 to 2. Lawyer Up from 2 to 1. Executive Wiretaps from 4 to 2. Singularity from 4 to 2. And now Queen's Gambit stays at 0, Power Nap stays at 0, Lucky Find stays at 3. So only 3 of the 10 receive no adjustment, and 2 of those already cost 0. So really only 1 of 10 was good enough that it didn't need to be reduced in cost. And there's really no other way to fix, I think, to buff Queen's Gambit or Power Nap. I mean, what are you going to do with Queen's Gambit? Say, get 3 credits per advancement. That seems crazy. Put 4 advancement tokens. That also seems crazy. 8 or 9 credits? That's too much. Or if Power Nap gave you 2 credits per double played? That's probably too strong. So really, it's just Lucky Find that's considered good or good enough. Let me run through a reminder of what all these doubles do, because it's not easy for me, even though I've covered all of them over the last few months, to keep them all straight what they do. So for 2 clicks and 0 credits in Reboot and 1 influence, you can get Eureka to reveal and install the top card of your stack for a 10-credit reduction. 2 influence cards at 0 credits are Frame Job, although you also have to forfeit an agenda, and that gives the corp a bad publicity. Hostage lets you find and install a connection resource. And Power Nap, like we've already discussed, you get 2 credits and a credit per double already played. For 0 credits and 3 influence, you have Queen's Gambit that lets you place 3 advancement tokens on a corp card and gain 6 credits. Now for your 2 clicks and 1 credit and 1 influence, it's Lawyer Up. Remove up to 2 tags and draw 3 cards. Then for 2 credits and 3 influence, you have Singularity to run a remote and trash all the cards in that server, and Executive Wiretaps to reveal all the cards in HQ. For 4 influence, which is a lot, you have Running Interference, where you get to make a run and the corp has to pay double to res any ice. Meanwhile, for your 2 clicks and 3 credits and 2 influence is Lucky Find to gain 9 credits for a net of 6. So here's my take on the relative value of these cards. At this point, when I wrote this up, I didn't cheat and look at what anybody else had to say. These are just my thoughts. Going in order from least expensive to most expensive. Eureka seems fun, but not good. Frame Job seems bad with the current pool until they maybe get agendas that give you 0 or -1 point. Hostage seems pretty decent, actually, especially if it's an out-of-faction connection, because then you can just run a hostage instead to grab any of those connections you want. Jens Eriksen ran this in his 2013 World Champ deck. The Power Nap seems fun, but maybe even less good than Eureka, so sorry, Shapers, you got a couple of dud doubles. Queen's Gambit seems actually pretty decent as an in-faction easy mark substitute. Lawyer Up actually seems pretty good to me as a much cheaper way to ditch account siphon tags. And Singularity seems fairly strong as a way of just dealing with upgraded servers. So long, Caprice and Ash and San City Grid. Executive Wiretaps just seems unnecessary. Not bad, but unnecessary. Running Interference seems really interesting to me, that paying double, and Lucky Find is okay. Those are my thoughts. But, I hear you asking, what does Fluffy One think of all these cards? I'm glad you asked. For Eureka, he said, yet another casualty of Lucas having worked on Lord of the Rings living card game. He also made this comment to the 2.1 channel because he said the card is similar to the best card in Lord of the Rings, and he rated it a 3. This shouldn't have been a double, he says. Frame Job, he agrees there are lots of -1 and 0 and 1 point agendas that could be ditched to this. He gives it a 5. Lame, but playable. For Hostage, he rates it a 6. Good for fetching Cotty Jones and the like. A Power Nap was not changed, so he gave no comment, but he does reference it as being decent out of max a couple other times, since you're just chucking all the doubles into archives anyway, rather than playing them. So there's a Power Nap Max deck. But again, Max doesn't come until the 3rd deluxe box. Queen's Gambit was also not changed, so no comment there. Lawyer Up, he gave a 5. Self-tagging isn't common, and with HB on top of the meta, tags just aren't a concern these days unless your deck is criminally low on econ. That is not a pun. Crims are rich. For Singularity, he says, pros, if you don't bounce off Caprice Nisei, you can trash all the stuff in ETF's remote for free, and then run archives and steal the agenda after you're happy with your keyhole mills. He rates it a 7. Fun and useful. Right. So, I said earlier, too bad Caprice, but in actuality, Caprice triggers before that run ends and ends the run there, so you can't use Singularity to ditch Caprice. Executive Wiretaps, he says, helps us avoid running. Sounds like a good idea. That sounds like sarcasm. He rates it a 3 and says, run. And Running Interference, he gives a 5 with some discussion about identities coming in the next deluxe box, especially a Jinteki ID called Tenon Institute. And finally, Lucky Find, again, no change, no comment. The Spin Cycle also gave us a couple of smaller sets of cards than these 10 doubles I've just run through. For one thing, there's the Stealth cards. With Stealth, there's the suite of hardware that we now have, the suite of breakers I thought we were going to get, and the suite of icebreakers that's coming. First, the hardware we have. As we all know, each faction specializes in breaking a certain type of ice. Anarchs are good against barriers, criminals against sentries, shapers against code gates. And in Fantasy Flight, in this cycle, released a stealth chip for each faction. In each case, it was a 3-influence, 1-cost piece of hardware with 1 recurring credit for using that faction's strong type of icebreaker. So that's Dyson Fractal Generator for Anarch, Silencer for Criminal, both in this pack, and Lockpick for Shaper, which came in opening moves. So the idea here, apparently, with Stealth, contrary to what I've been remembering, is to have a targeted cyber feeder type effect, but they're a little cheaper. So cyber feeder from the core set is a one influence, two cost card that works on all types of breakers and viruses. So these are all a little cheaper. Similar with Cloak in Creation and Control, actually. But it's a little cheaper because it doesn't have the virus functionality. So again, if Cyber Feeder is two cost and Cloak is one cost, it makes sense that these specialized versions are also one cost. Now in Reboot, Cyber Feeder has been reduced to one. So Cloak was left at one. Dyson and Silencer have both been reduced to zero, but not Lockpick. It's still a one cost. Now, Fluffy One rates Dyson a 5 and Silencer a 7, calling it the best of the three, so Lockpick, which wasn't changed, I guess must be a 6. That's the set of stealth hardware that we have. That's what stealth hardware is designed to do, is to make the specific type of breaker cheaper and easier to use. So the second part of this is the breakers I thought we were going to get. Creation and Control gave us Dagger, a shaper card that can get to very high strength very cheaply if the credit comes from a stealth card, but it's a killer. So that suggests that the credit would have to come from either Cloak or now Silencer is an option. But you see, killers are not shaper strong suit. Decoders are. So what I thought at the time, and a lot of others thought at the time, I think, and in fact, what I still thought, right up until I started putting together this segment, was that we were going to get a suite of breakers like that, that were not the strong suit of each faction, but were good because they used stealth. So Shapers got a stealth killer, though again, stealth is not one of the subtypes, and it would stand to reason that Criminals would get a stealth Fractor in the upcoming box, and Anarchs would get a stealth Decoder in their deluxe box. Well, that never happened. And maybe they never intended it to happen. Or maybe it just didn't work as well as they thought it might. So Dagger is, sort of, the only one of its kind. But there are stealth breakers that are coming to go along with these particular stealth chips. In the Lunar Cycle, right in the middle of the cycle, packs 3 and 4, we'll see a cycle of stealth breakers. There's, I don't know how to pronounce this. I heard it pronounced Blacket. I've heard of people pronouncing it Black Cat. I've heard it pronounced Black At, like Black Hat. I don't know what it is. Black Cat, Switchblade, and Refractor. But they're all tied into the faction strength. Switchblade is the criminal stealth program, and it's a killer. So these stealth chips seem to get designed to go with those stealth programs. And then in that world, in the world we have, Cloak and Dagger is just its own set doing its own thing, I guess. Now, incidentally, I asked in the balance discussion channel why Lockpick was not reduced in cost, whereas Dyson Fractal Generator and Silencer were. And the big boy said, because Refractor is really good. It's the best stealth card by a lot. Refractor is that decoder that's coming up, that stealth decoder in the next cycle. Although Fluffy One didn't necessarily agree with that because he gave a 7. Oh no, Silencer, Lockpick. He didn't rate those. Okay, maybe he did rate those. I haven't gotten to him yet. Never mind. Cut that part. So the reason why Refractor is really good is because its requirement for using stealth gives it a nice boost of strength, but it can still break by using regular credits. Meanwhile, Anarch's Black Cat doesn't boost nearly as cleanly with its stealth credit. And Criminal Switchblade needs 2 stealth credits, one to boost and one to break. So that's why Refractor is the best of those. And Refractor being so strong means that Lockpick is naturally stronger because it works well with Refractor. And then actually there's a set of breakers that we won't see in Reboot. They were part of the 6th cycle for Fantasy Flight. But they were all Shaper cards, and they were all designed to work with the Smoke ID. That's the character we see on Notoriety in Daily Casts. And then another small cycle of cards, maybe? that I never really thought of grouping together before until I saw a comment about them somewhere, is the set of two MU specialty programs. So in the core set, criminals got Sneak Door Beta. It's an early pressure card, especially, that eats up a lot of memory, but then Archives gets iced up, and maybe it's not a big deal to hold on to it anymore. Now, just a couple packs ago, Anarch got a big 2MU specialty program, Keyhole, which is also pretty strong early for just dumping lots of corpse stuff into the trash, and I guess it's just pretty strong all the way through. And now Shaper gets Paintbrush, which is really strong in the early game also, especially for Kit. Though, of course, you can use it later, too. I mean, they're not that similar in effect. They kind of all do have evoke the faction's theme, I think, where Criminal is getting around stuff, and Anarch is just trashing stuff, and Paint and Shaper is just changing stuff up the way they want it. But another way they're similar is that they're all 3 influence, 4 cost, 2MU programs. Well, except Paintbrush is 4 influence. And 3 cost. Well, and now only 1MU. Okay, maybe this one was a little bit of a reach. Anyway, many of the cards discussed in this week's episode are linked in the show notes. Music is from Alexi Action, the website, which takes you to the Reboot Project homepage, is netrunner2.1.com. Come join us on the Reboot Discord server, ask your questions, get your answers. Play at retucky.fun, and be sure to join the pre-constructed league that's starting up in just a couple of days. Or even if you're hearing this after June 6th or June 7th of 2024. Jump in there anyway, maybe there's room. The AstroScript pilot program from this time around is a chat log that serves as the flavor insert from Double Time. So we'll take a look at that. We'll see the corpse side of Double Time next time around. Until then, thanks for listening. Don't make me. Number 1 rule of running. Prowler_32. ... Don't make me. Always tie your laces. Prowler_32. Ha ha. Is that Guru? Don't make me. Fake spear. Dynomite has entered the room. Dynomite. Dino smash. Prowler_32. Dino! Don't make me. What is Dinosaurus' favorite ice? Dynomite. Dino have no favorite. Hate them all. Prowler_32. Ha ha. Wingman has entered the room. Don't make me. Johnny boy. Prowler_32. Hey! Wingman. They got the queen. It's all over the Del Oeste feed. Don't make me. What the frag? Prowler_32. Port? Wingman. I'm on 4Z. Prowler_32. +++. Wingman. Bunch of zealots were there waving signs, but the nappers took her. Prowler_32. Fraggers? Don't make me. It's not them. It's Grendel. That crazy bioroid hack had to land on someone. Wingman. I think she did it. Dynomite. Bioroid too fresh with interface. Dino hack bioroid. Don't make me. She's just the fall guy. Tried to pin the poisoned water supply on her, too. Can't hack a tin box to override those laws without months of prep. And it's a new model. Had to be an inside job. Wingman. Yes, you can hack it, and she's that extreme. The NAPD has entered the room. The NAPD. All your queens are belong to us. The NAPD has left the room. Wingman. Frag off, Joker. Don't make me. Left before I could kick. Wingman. They won't be able to keep her locked in. Prowler_32. Maybe she won it in? Wingman. Yeah. hack them out, bring them down from inside. Don't make me. Knock over the nappers? Ha ha ha, you guys are loco. Just another witch hunt. Wingman, you don't know her. The NAPD has entered the room. Dynomite.
Dino chomp fake feds. Taste good.
The NAPD has left the room. Wingman. Bravo.